The following program was paid for by Choice Benefits Agency, LLC, and Kalinka Team Consultants, LLC. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a professional before making a major decision. It's time now for Let's Save Thousands. Here's your host for the program, Dr. Edwin Kalinka.
Welcome to Let's Save Thousands. I'm Ed Kalinka, here with
Bev Kalinka.
Bev Kalinka, the co-host and birthday gal.
Thank you, Ed.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Beverly. Happy birthday to you. I did that for the sole purpose of having to say I sang on the radio. Had nothing to do with your birthday or being in love with you. No. This was just simply all about Ed.
Well, you carried a nice tune there, bud. And thank you for the serenade.
What would you like to talk about? Because we've got an exciting guest joining us in a little while.
We do.
Jeff Seidsma.
Local attorney in Morristown. And very, very knowledgeable gentleman. There's a wonderful way about him. Certainly the type of legal counsel you want when you're looking to purchase or sell. Really looks out for his clients.
You've heard it here, folks.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Bright, bright individual that has a lot to offer his clients to make sure he protects them.
So tune in a little bit later. We're going to go over a couple of little items first, but make sure you hang in there till the end of the show, because we get to interview Jeff, or Ed gets to interview Jeff and talk about contracts, which was pretty interesting.
I'm sad to say I will not be singing Jeff happy birthday.
So Ed.
Beverly, what's up?
It is National Home Ownership Month for the month of June.
This is a beautiful thing.
So, 6 reasons to celebrate National Home Ownership Month. Our homes have become so much more than houses that we live in today. For many of us, it's become the workplace, it's become the school building for our children, and the safe harbors in which we have weathered some of the toughest times during a global pandemic. Today, 65.6% of Americans call their homes their own, a rate that has risen to the highest point in 8 years. As the National Home Ownership Month kicks off this June, homeowners will have reason to celebrate. A survey by the Gallup just ranked real estate as the best investment you can make for the 8th year in a row. However, unlike other investment options, the benefits of owning a home aren't purely financial. Here are some of the top ways Americans are winning by owning a home. And we had a segment on investing, how important investing in real estate, just as your primary residence, never mind, investment properties. And we did the numbers and talked about how, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, the value just will increase or certainly stay steady.
It sets that, as Immanuel Kant would say, the Grundlegung, the foundation, to allow us to build capital and to move on from there and to really start to flourish.
Yeah. So for this home ownership month of June, a couple of things they want to bring up is the non-financial benefit. Number one is going to be the civic participation. Owning a home is owning a part of your neighborhood. Homeowners have stronger connection to their neighbors and are more committed to volunteer work and other ways to get involved.
Now we're in my wheelhouse.
Ooh, look out. Here we go. Pitch for Rotary's coming. I hear it.
Absolutely. Rotary.org.
When I think of when we used to live in Pompton Plains, we were softball coaches. I was on the zoning board. You were on the planning board. I mean, when you're entrenched in a community, you want to help. You want to be...
You build roots.
Right. And you want to be participants. So it's always... when they talk about this civic participation, I think it's really important to to know that that's a, such an integral part of not just an investment.
No, you're invested in the community and your neighbors. It really shows.
The second one is pride of ownership. Owning a home is having a space that is uniquely yours. You can customize it to your personal liking and make it reflect your personality and values. I think when we're on listing appointments where there are homeowners that occupy a property, and versus the homeowner that has a tenant that's renting, there is a marked difference when you're typically looking at how a home is taken care of.
I think pretty much on the whole that applies. That there's a marked difference also in if that tenant happens to be a friend, relative, or that person is involved with the community. Those people, sure. What we find is sometimes you have people who move into a neighborhood, and this does, there's no true negative connotation to being a renter. That's not the point. What we're looking at we're looking at here is that we'll see that homeowners are invested. That's the word. They're invested in their property, and they take a greater amount of care.
But when unfortunately renters, it's not that they're not taking the care, but they can't customize and make it necessarily their own. And they're going to be limited to what they want to invest in the property themselves because they know they don't own it.
But we also talked in a previous segment how that renters are spending a much greater percentage of their income on rent than they do, than people do on home ownership. So they don't have the cash, regular cash, extra
funds to be able to do certain.
Right.
Things. You're right.
And they're less motivated to invest in someone else's property.
Right. So number three is a safe space. Owning a home gives you a sense of security and privacy. Two things that have become even more valuable as we've tackled the challenges of the recent health.
And, you know, here we come, Maslow, in his hierarchy of needs, the need for safety and security.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important.
Roof over your head, be able to, you know, buy food.
Mm-hmm. Right. Know where you're going to be every night.
Mm-hmm. So the next three are the financial benefits. Forced savings is the first one. Owning a home builds equity. Your equity grows with each payment that you make towards your mortgage. This form of forced savings can be used down the road to help you accomplish your biggest financial goals.
Absolutely, because with a forced savings, you're saving in a number of ways. Number one, you're investing in your property.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even gotten into the tax benefits.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't gotten into the escalation of your equity due to the, we won't use the word inflation, but as
increased values
mm-hmm. occur, so does your net worth. You know, people will be able to grow their net worth much quicker through home ownership than through their earning.
Well, and here's number two, appreciation. Owning a home is making an investment that steadily gains value, and experts project home values will continue to rise in the years to come. So it's kind of just spinning off of what you just said. Number three is stability. And to me, this is probably one of the most important. Owning a home means having better control over your future housing payments. Over the years, a mortgage stays relatively steady, but rent costs continue to rise. And we did a whole segment on this last week, I believe, on the difference between the rent versus purchase in today's market and how it would look a year from now or 2 years from now with the anticipated potential rate increases.
Yeah, I mean, those of us who are listening, we know our audience is a certain age. And if we were to look back 10, 15, 20 years of woulda, coulda, shoulda
mm-hmm.
in buying an investment property. God knows you've heard that from me ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you were to pick up a property 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you could retire on that money right now. I mean, there is a significant difference. We're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
I remember when I was little, I remember my dad telling me that he paid $11,000 for his house, you know. And that was just, I couldn't believe that he, I mean, so little, right?
Yeah.
And when you're ending up being able to sell it in, you know, in the 300, 400, 500 range, it's like all in 30 years.
Yeah. And, you know, but the problem is during that point in time in life, you don't see that.
Mm.
You can't see beyond that horizon. You know, you are looking at it in a linear fashion. You're not climbing up to the mountaintop to take a 360 perspective and recognize or have a vision for that growth.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to share here, is that homeownership is a great value, gives you a good opportunity to start to build that nest egg and for your future.
Right. So the bottom line, if you own a home, take time this June to celebrate the ways homeownership has added value to your life. And if you hope to become a homeowner this year, let's connect, get in touch with us. We'll give you some great guidance and start you on the first steps towards that home ownership. Sound like a plan?
It does, but let's continue with this.
Okay.
What are some of the things that haven't been mentioned here? What are some of the value add benefits of home ownership that we can either expand upon what was mentioned or I'm thinking having your own garden.
There you have it.
How great is that? To be able to have your own garden, create your own vegetables.
Have those groundhogs eat your...
Well, we will have a poster of Bill Murray from Caddyshack there. Fight those groundhogs. But also fighting Bambi as well is another thing.
So true, New Jersey.
We happen to love Bambi, but other people refer to them as rats on stilts. You know, and we have had that experience where I thought I had a gorgeous garden in the backyard, to come out one morning devastated that thieves came in the middle of the night and stole everything. Well, we were able to salvage two squash.
Right.
So I think they were about $300 a piece that cost us for everything.
That's about right.
But having a garden, people get a tremendous amount of joy. You yourself, you're a gardener. You like putting the flowers out there.
I do. It's great therapy. Yeah.
It is. And people, like myself, love to come home and see that.
Yeah.
You know, it's therapeutic. In addition to that, we have people who now, every outside area is a major recreational facility for young people. Not even just for young people, you know, people of all ages get to do stuff, exercise, and be out in their own yard. And this is something that COVID has accentuated. And why we've got this concept of urban flight continuing, where people recognize they want to have that space, and they want to be able to recreate without being inhibited.
Yeah.
These are all great things.
No, they are. They are, and you make a great point. So, on that note...
We'll all start chanting, home ownership, home ownership, home ownership.
Well...
Let us help you get there.
So the next segment here, Matt, is going to be what's motivating people to move right now.
Home ownership. Home ownership.
Okay. So this year, Americans are moving for a variety of reasons. The health crisis has truly reshaped our lives and our lifestyles and our needs. Spending so much more time in our current homes has driven many people to reconsider what home ownership means and what they find most valuable in their living space. And I read this, and we're tapping from current matters, keeping current matters, just so you know where we're sourcing this from. I read this, and I have to think of the two good clients that we have. Well, they're all good clients, but particular clients that we had just sold them a house in Mars Plains. They put an absolutely stunning $60,000-$70,000 kitchen in. COVID hits and they're working from home. And the house is, it's not small. And then they call us up and they said, you know what? We've decided since we're working from home all this time, they want a bigger house. Bigger yard for the dog, bigger house. And when I think of something like this, the first thing I think of, I think they owned the house for maybe a year and a half, 2 years, not even. As soon as COVID hit, they were, okay. We love our kitchen, but time to move to someplace a little bit bigger. I think so each one of them can have an office on each side of the house.
Well, that's so important. How many times have we been speaking to clients where you'll be chatting with them, then all of a sudden it's just, well, wait a minute, my wife or husband is on a business call. I need to, go into another room. I need to step outside.
Yeah.
We've had that.
My gosh, when the office shut down due to COVID on March 21st, it was Zoom calls 24/7 for the first several weeks. And, I remember how it's so easy to hear the interruption, even if you're a couple rooms away.
Well, one value-added benefit of COVID for baby boomers like myself is it's dragging me into the 21st century.
You were there already.
Whoever thought of Zoom before? Mm.
Some people did, because their stock prices
went crazy. Well, it's me. It's from Jackie Gleason, Bing Bang Zoom to the moon, Alice. That's where I relate that Zoom from.
Yes. So getting back to what's motivating people right now. So according to the 2020 annual National Movers Study, and I quote, for customers who cited COVID-19 as an influence on their move in 2020, the top reasons associated with COVID-19 were concerns for personal and family health and well-being, and that's 60%, desires to be closer to family, we didn't touch on that, and that's 59%. 57% moved due to changes in employment status and work arrangements, including the ability to work remotely. And 53% desired a lifestyle change and improvement of quality of life. So, we kind of hit on this in my quick comment about some clients of ours. But what we didn't hit on was the desire to be closer to family, 59%. I mean, it's right up there with the bulk of the reasons why people moved in 2020 and 2021. If you were homeschooling your children and you were also working from home and, you know, mom and dad or grandma and grandpa, were, you know, maybe 30, 40 minutes away, it made you reconsider. Or it made grandma and grandpa reconsider. Because it's nice, it really did make families a lot tighter, knit group, because it helped. You needed help during this time. Whether it was having people join in under one roof with a larger home and sharing some family space there, or like I said, making the assistance with, you know, working from home and teaching the kids, you know, to schooling at home and all of that.
What we also see is, you know, we mentioned about the urban flight with people, and we've had a number of instances where it were the parents and grandparents that moved out of the city to be closer to the children and grandchildren so that they could help out, recognizing that their son or daughter is going to be confined to telework and needed help with the children so that they continued their work from home. Mm-hmm. You know, it's so important. And the other instance we've seen are people moving back up from Florida or Georgia to be closer to the family up in this area.
Yeah, it's not within New Jersey. That's absolutely correct. I mean, they're, you know, it's out of state to New Jersey to help out, or vice versa, you know.
And so family's, you know, the utmost importance.
Yeah. So with a new perspective on home ownership, here are some of the reasons people are reconsidering where they live and making moves right now. So we're going to reference the first one is working from home. Number one, remote work became the new norm, and for some, it's persisting longer than initially expected. Many in the workforce today are discovering that they don't need to live so close to the office anymore, and they can get more for their money if they move a little further outside of the city limits. So Apartment List notes, and I quote, the COVID pandemic has sparked a rebound in residential migration. Survey data suggests that 16% of American workers moved between April 2020 and April of 2021, up from 14% in 2019. The first increase in migration in over a decade. Whoa. That's wild. One of the major drivers, in this trend is remote work, which expanded greatly in response to COVID and will remain prevalent even after pandemic wanes. No longer tethered to a physical job site, remote workers were 53% more likely to move this past year than on-site workers. That's a large increase since 2019. So in 1 year, basically, it's a 14% increase in migration.
Yeah, I mean, not many people even knew the term telework.
WFH. No, work from home. I mean, when I first saw that, I'm like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Huh?
I thought that was some X-rated, an acronym or something.
No, Ed. All right, so number two is room for fitness and activities. Staying healthy and active is a top priority for Americans, and dreams have of having a space at your home for like a gym have absolutely grown exponentially. A recent survey of 4,538 active adults from 122 countries noted three fastest growing fitness trends among active adults. The first is a home fitness equipment, 50%, up 50%. Personal trainers and nutritionists, up 48%. Online fitness courses, classes, and subscriptions, up 17%. Having room to maintain a healthy lifestyle at home, physically and mentally, may prompt you to consider a new place to live that includes space for at-home workouts, hobbies, and activities for your household. There you go. So you had talked about gardening, you had talked about some other stuff. This really kind of touches on the other healthy aspect of it, which is your body, you know, not just the mental aspect of it, but your body, which is interesting. Okay, number three is outdoor space. Oh, Ed, did you read this in advance?
No, I didn't read it.
Okay, Better Homes and Gardens recently released the outdoor living trends for this year, and the three of them are... One, outdoor kitchens. 60% of homeowners are looking to add outdoor kitchens. Interesting. Number two is edible gardens. Millions of people began gardening during the pandemic to supplement pantries and homegrown fruits, vegetables, and herbs. How do you like that?
Yeah, deer do it. Why not us?
And three is secluded spaces. As outdoor activities increase, so does the need for privacy. So you may not, however, currently have the space you need for those designated areas inside and out. Bottom line, if you're clamoring for more room to accommodate your changing needs, making a move might be your best bet, especially when you can take advantage of today's low interest rates and mortgage rates. Sound like a plan?
This sounds like a plan. It sounds like a great opportunity. Now, where should people go if they're looking to consider this? They should go visit kalinkateam.com. Check out our website.
Mm-hmm.
Have any questions? You can reach us at letsavethousands@gmail.com, or you can call Beverly at 973-670-8338.
You can actually message us too, right through our website. So if you go into our website, you literally have the ability to send us a text message. You can send us a private message. It's pretty cool. All right, Ed, on to the next chapter of our
show. And we're going to hear in the next moment, we're going to be introducing Jeff Seedsma. See you on the other side.
Sounds like a plan.
Today, we'd like to welcome Jeff Seedsma, an attorney from Morristown, New Jersey. He's been a practicing attorney for the past 16 years. Jeff, welcome to Let's Save Thousands.
Thank you, and I appreciate you having me on.
All right, for our listener, can you give them a little bit of background about your educational background and your experience as an attorney?
Sure. As far as my educational background goes, I went to Syracuse University on a Chancellor's Scholarship. I graduated from there with a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. And soon thereafter, I went to Seton Hall School of Law, where I graduated with honors. And that is about 16 years ago now that I graduated from Seton Hall. After graduating, I worked for larger firms for 9 or 10 years, and then I opened my own practice back in 2014.
And you've been practicing real estate for some time?
Yes, sir. Yep.
You know, in today's world, there's been a great number of changes in real estate since around 1995. And for those people who had purchased prior to that who are now just selling, which are people who are mostly baby boomers, they're finding that there are so many disclosures, changes in business relationship and agency laws. How do you help people who are buying and selling either for the first time or for not in a long time, to navigate through the attorney review process?
Well, actually, Ed, one of the first things I ask people when they come to me, when they give me that first phone call about if I'm interested in being their attorney, is, you know, I go over the process because, you know, it may be their first time or it may have not been for a long time that they bought. So I go through, you know, just to follow the 10,000-foot overview of the process of buying or selling a house in New Jersey. And that, you know, starts with the attorney review process where, you know, it's a little backwards to the, you know, common thought that you sign a contract and then you negotiate the terms and then you have a firm contract. So I want to make sure people understand what that's all about. And as far as, you know, even during the attorney review, we don't have a firm deal yet. So the attorney review process is concluded. And then once the attorney review is concluded, we have a firm deal, everything starts to happen as you would expect. As far as deposits being due, inspections, working on mortgage applications and getting mortgage approvals, getting title insurance pulled, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's go through some of that. You mentioned it being sort of upside down. So one of the first things that people go through with an agent where there's a great deal of hesitancy is having to sign a consumer information statement and a pre-informed consent for disclosed dual agency. Do you go through these forms with your prospective buyers and sellers?
Well, we more focus on the contractual terms that are listed in the contract. You know, certainly people are aware when they get to me if they've used the same agent that's, you know, doing the listing and representing them as a buyer or vice versa. So they're generally aware that by the time they get to me what that entails.
So you focus on the main body of the contract. And
right.
That effectively is the realtor-prepared contract. So it's not as if realtors have the option to write out their own contract. This is an agreed-upon document that realtors really just fill in the blanks.
Yes, I do, you know, oftentimes explain that to people as well when explaining why we have attorney review. It's because at some point in time, our courts in New Jersey determined that negotiating a contract crosses the line from being a realtor into practicing law. So realtors can take their form contract and they could fill in the blanks. They can have everyone sign it. But after that point, as far as negotiating specific contractual terms, you know, that is really one of the purposes of the attorney review process.
Now, is there a difference between a realtor that fills out a pre-prepared contract by filling in the blanks and that between a transaction where an owner decides to sell the house themselves, picks up a regular Allstate form, and then gives it to a buyer to sign?
It's not too often that a person selling their house will search out a contract form and say, okay, this is a good one out of all the ones on Google, and I'm going to use this. In North Jersey, our custom is generally to buy and sell real estate with an attorney. So although, most of the time, realtors are involved, every once in a while they are not. You know, the for sale by owner context especially. Even if they are selling it without a realtor, people will often get an attorney for the contractual part.
The group that I asked, you know, there have been experiences that we have seen and or heard of anecdotally where either a buyer or a seller presents the other with a contract that's signed without having the 3-day attorney review privilege contained in that document. And if it doesn't...
Yeah, I've heard something about that as well, too, although I've not experienced it. And you know, kind of a sidebar, but of note, you know, when you have attorneys preparing the contract and they're not using the realtor form contract, we generally don't have an attorney review period. We're negotiating everything up front, and then once everybody signs, we go from there. That is the effective date of the contract, and all the deadlines start from that date.
Right, but this is an interesting and important aspect of the process for both buyers and sellers to recognize it's in their best interest to have an attorney review the document, and or at least have that caveat that they do have that ability to do so in order to protect your interest.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. A contract that both parties sign is a binding document for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I think it would behoove anyone to engage an attorney for, in comparison, the minimal cost for having your rights protected.
I wholeheartedly agree. The, you know, some of the questions that buyers may have for you, you know, how can you orchestrate buying and selling on the same day? How do you manage that?
Well, it can be tricky, but generally, you know, the attorney bar, if you're dealing with an attorney on the other side of your transaction, you're saying, well, I'm selling to you and I'm buying on the same day, you know, everyone's been in that position. So everyone tries to work together and make that happen. So as complicated as it sounds, it usually just, it tends to work out okay. In which case you're, you know, selling your property in the morning, closing that, getting the money wired over to the title company for your purchase, and closing on that in the afternoon. And it's a little bit of a whirlwind day for the people involved, but you know, it tends to work out.
Another question that people have.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to add in, you know, sometimes too, we have this concept of the, we call it rent back, but it's not really renting back. But, you know, the technical or term of art is use and occupancy. So that can be a tool that could be useful as well. You know, if you're selling to someone and your purchase may not close for another couple of days yet, you can approach the person that's buying from you and say, hey, I'd like to stay in my property for a few days after closing. I'll pay your carrying costs. We'll hold an escrow in case there's any damages, et cetera. And, you know, we'll close. I'll stay for another couple of days, and then I'll close on my purchase, and I'll be out of here.
And that's a softer, easier path.
Yes, it, oftentimes it can be. Yep.
Another question that buyers often have is, what's the typical deposit? And who should hold it?
Well, you know, opinions vary on this. You know, I think it's customary that the seller's attorney holds it. Whenever I represent a seller, I ask to hold it. On the other hand, some attorneys do not want to do the accounting work associated with maintaining the trust account and are happy to let the other attorney hold it.
And is there a specific amount that should be held, or is that something which is negotiated between parties as far as deposit?
Well, you know, it's really a case-by-case basis, and a lot of that has to do with what kind of loan the buyer's getting. And it may have to do with how competitive the situation is for that property as well. Of course, a bigger deposit may help you stand out in a competitive bidding situation. On the other hand, if you're getting a VA or an FHA loan, your deposit may only be a couple thousand dollars.
A term that we see often in contract, actually it's in every contract, is the term as is. What does that mean, and how does that impact each party?
Sure. There's a lot of confusion over that, Ed, I will tell you. To me, as is means the seller does not have to fix anything. And it works hand in hand with the home inspection contingency. So, you know, I have sellers all the time, they get an inspection request and they're not willing to do anything, and they jump up and down saying, but it's as is. I say, well, the paragraph 16 of the form contract, every transaction is as is. And what that means is you don't have to fix anything. However, there's the countervailing right of the buyers with the home inspection contingency. So if there's material things or structural, environmental, mechanical, whatever you agreed upon during attorney review that you as a seller are not willing to address, the buyer has the right to cancel and walk away and get their deposit back.
Another term that's often confusing for people is related to bulk sales.
Yes, bulk sale. That is a concept where a company is selling its assets. And one of those assets could be real property. Or if it's an investor, so to speak, and they own a property in an LLC, that would be considered an asset of the LLC. So New Jersey has this process where they put the onus on the buyer, actually, to submit for what we call bulk sale clearance. There's a particular form you need to submit, and it needs to be put in 10 days before the closing, the form along with a copy of the contract. And in response, the state will send you something back saying, you know, if there's any escrow required to be held on behalf of the seller to satisfy any potential taxes they may owe. So very important for the buying side is if you don't do that, you could become responsible for the seller's tax liabilities.
Another term mentioned by some people is exit tax.
So in New Jersey, this is often misunderstood as well. If you're a New Jersey resident and you're leaving the state and you're selling your property, you are not subject to the quote-unquote exit tax. So the exit tax is when the deed goes in for recording, there's a form called a git rep that goes in with the deed, and you're either submitting a git rep 1 for someone that's out of state or a git rep 3 for someone in state. So someone in state, where this is their primary residence, they would not be a withholding. They're exempt. Somebody that's out of state that owns New Jersey property, you will complete a git rep 1, and as a result, 2% of the contract price will be held at closing. That'll be a deduction off your bottom line, off your net proceeds. And really what it is an incentive for New Jersey to make sure that you file your taxes, your New Jersey taxes, that next coming year. And you can claim that 2% is prepaid taxes or what have you. You don't have the tax liability. Essentially, it'll be coming back. But really, it's just an incentive or a prepayment of potential taxes you may have for the coming tax year.
Another sticky wicket during the transaction is dealing with home inspection issues. How is it that you prepare both your buyer and seller to deal with inspection issues?
Well, you know, generally, try and work in concert with the realtor on that. You know, I don't think it's a good idea to have two different people on your side of the transaction telling you two different things. So oftentimes I will discuss with the realtor first about, you know, what the report looks like if you're on the buying side, or what, you know, I often ask a buyer what kind of things might you want to see them address. You know, we get a list from them. I'll review the inspection report as well. And if there's things on there that are, you know, out of bounds, I will often have to try and tell the client, you know, that's not really a valid inspection item. And that's not something sellers ever do. So if you want to get them to do the things that you really want done, you might want to consider removing that. You know, another interesting point in these times, Ed, is a lot of people are waiving portions of their inspection, you know, because it's such a competitive market. So I will see contracts oftentimes these days where, you know, the home inspection contingency is limited to only, for example, structural or environmental type issues. So anything else is essentially being waived that doesn't fit into one of those two buckets in that hypothetical. So that's, you know, when that contract comes in and that's what it says, you know, one of the first things I do during attorney review is say, are you aware of what you're waiving here?
It's very important. It's insightful because a lot of times they aren't aware.
Right. Yeah, we don't all often know what kind of advice they're getting before, you know, they get to me or get to us. And, you know, someone could be telling them, you need to do X, Y, and Z in order to get the deal. And they do X, Y, and Z, and they don't really know what X, Y, and Z means.
Yeah, however, like you mentioned, the structural and environmental, a lot of times these hidden defects, you know, are just that, hidden defects, and it requires another set of eyes to investigate further. And that's why we have all of these inspectors.
Sure.
In order to close the transaction, there are going to be additional certificates that are being required, a certificate of occupancy, a smoke detector certification. Not all towns require a CO, but some do. What guidance do you offer both buyers and sellers regarding these?
Well, every town requires a smoke cert, and what I tell them oftentimes in the attorney review phase is somebody from the town is going to come in and make sure you have smoke alarms where they're required, carbon monoxide alarms where they're required, and a fire extinguisher in the kitchen. So that's really what they're looking for. As far as the CO, you know, different towns do it different ways. Some towns will check and make sure all your permits are closed. Some towns like, East Orange, Newark, Plainfield, they do something of a full inspection and look for things like, you know, railings and electrical meters for multi-units and, you know, raised sidewalks and things like that. And on the other hand, some towns do no more than, you know, the smoke cert inspection. So it really is a town-by-town inquiry.
When sellers are calculating their net, they're sometimes surprised to learn about the real estate transfer tax. Can you discuss that for a moment?
Sure. There is a realty transfer fee, RTF we call it, on every sale of real estate in New Jersey. And it's what it essentially is a graduated formula, I would call it, where it's, you know, X number of dollars tax per dollar or $1,000 on the first, you know, $50,000 or what have you. And then it changes from there. And it works out to something on the order of 1-ish or so percent. But don't take that as gospel. There's charts online readily available if you want to see what your realty transfer. However, also, if you were over 62 and this is your principal residence in New Jersey, and or if you're disabled, you can be entitled to a reduced realty transfer fee, which is essentially half of what the normal one is.
So there's an advantage to growing older.
Oh, yes. Not being wiser.
A question that some people ask is, do they have to attend the closing?
Well, as a seller, you do not, especially in COVID times, right? Those which we're just kind of starting to come out of. But even during normal times, sellers will often not go to their closing. What they'll do is, or what I do when I represent sellers, is say, give me a time, a day that works before closing day. You can come to my office, we can sign the deed, go through everything, and then I'll make sure they get to the closing.
Now, is there a possibility to close through the mail, particularly, let's say, if somebody's living out of state?
Yeah, if a seller's out of state, you know, they certainly don't have to come all the way back to New Jersey to sign their documents. Another option is I can send them electronically or overnight a copy of their deed and the other required documents, which they can go sign in front of a local notary and then overnight them back to me.
So that simplifies things quite a bit.
Sure, sure. Now, especially for people who have already found their next home out of state and are just, you know, they've already relocated and they're just, you know, tying up the loose end of selling their New Jersey house.
When we're moving away toward, you know, from the urban areas more into the suburban and rural areas, we're all often dealing with three items: septic, well, and oil tanks. How do we address each one of these?
Well, let's talk about oil tanks first. So every buyer I have, implore them to do what we call a UST sweep, underground storage tank sweep, to make sure that there's not an oil tank in the ground. You know, once they close and own that property, you know, that would become theirs. Tank in the ground is a potential huge liability, especially if it leaked. I mean, you could be talking of tens of thousands of dollars for potential cleanups. So people will often kind of resist it. But really, a tank sweep is $300. So $300 to avoid tens of thousands of dollars of potential liability, and my book is worth it. So that said, you know, oftentimes, not every town has a natural gas service, so above ground oil tanks is a fact of life and not a big deal. As long as there's not someone in the ground, of course. If you ask me what my number one deal killer was, go ahead and ask me.
What has been your number one deal killer, Jeff?
Septic systems. So, you know, being located in Morristown, it's kind of, a central-type location in the middle of northern New Jersey. So, you know, I can get you know, local transactions, and then, you know, out in Warren and Sussex County as well. And, you know, it is a rarity that you see a septic inspection report where it just says it's satisfactory. I would say, you know, a handful of times out of 100. And oftentimes people, the sellers will just have no idea that their septic is bad, or they're just in disbelief, you know, what have you. So that that inspection comes, and oh boy, you know, you need a whole new septic system, and that's $25,000-$30,000, something like that, to get it all redone. So, I mean, you could have minor issues that could be repaired, you know, distribution boxes, laterals, you know, lids, things like that. Could be no big deal, but, you know, nothing will stop the show like a report that says a septic system needs to be replaced, both financially and from a time perspective as well, as we're talking about a couple months, generally, when you start the process to, you know, when the septic's all done and approved by the appropriate municipal body.
And what about wells?
Wells, yes. That was the third part. So, you know, wells aren't as big of a problem from what I've seen. But again, part of that depends on the type of loan. You know, VA loan, for instance. Well, let's take a step back for a second. So when you, the law requires in New Jersey that if you have a well on your property, that prior to closing, you need to give your buyer a well test. That's searching for the presence or what have you of various items or parameters of the, you know, and we divide those things into primary and secondary categories. Primary things are testing for effect, you know, whether the water can be consumed. Secondary items in a well test kind of more affect, you know, color, taste, that be, you know, corrode your pipes from the inside, what have you, based on these various things that could be in the water. So, you know, the law says nothing more than the seller has to provide a well test. In effect, you know, the well water fails one of those primary standards. You know, that's something that you would ask a seller to address. Generally, sellers will not address the secondary parameters. And unless you're dealing with a VA loan, for instance, then a VA loan requires a passing primary and secondary water test. But otherwise, you know, sellers would generally will not address secondary concerns.
Now I'm going to ask you for some of these juicy and titillating experiences that you've had during the course of your tenure as an attorney to share some of the horror stories.
Horror stories. Well, let's see. I can recall one particular with a septic system where, you know, generally older style septics, I will say, they're fine as long as they, you know, don't need to be repaired. So it's the old concept of grandfathering. So if you inspected an older septic system and it wasn't quite the code, but it was okay, then, you know, you could keep going with it. However, the moment it needs a repair, the whole thing needs to be redone to be brought up to code. So I recall one transaction in particular where our inspector said it was in a particular component of the system there called a distribution box, and he swore his life on it. He took pictures. There was no pictures of a distribution box, and if it didn't have a distribution box, the system needed to be rebuilt. Well, what do you know? The town comes back out, and there's a crumbled distribution box on the ground, you know, along where the system had partially been dug up. So I have a strong suspicion that somebody just dropped it on the ground there. And said, oh, there's a distribution box. It's crumbled. So we don't need to replace this whole system. So that's one I recall. I recall one where we found an oil tank, and this was an investor selling the property. And we did the oil tank sweep, and they flagged the area. And then I think the guy over the weekend just went and dug it out himself and buried it over and said, oh, there's no oil tank here. But I've had you know, some instances with, yeah, I remember one particular instance with, it was a domino effect of, you know, you were talking earlier about the when you have to sell and purchase, but there was like four layers of that. So the ultimate game of real estate dominoes. And somewhere in the chain, someone declared time is of the essence, and meaning that you demand to close within 10 days of the missed closing date. And that person was, I guess the closing didn't happen within that 10-day time period, and the person demanded $15,000 for that one-day delay. And somebody paid it in the domino chain.
That's a heartbreak.
Yeah. I think it was a combination of realtors giving up some of their commissions and
suppliers. We don't ever want to hear about that. We don't want to. Yeah.
But I edit that part out.
We'll put that, we'll leave that part in because, you know, a lot of people don't realize so realtors sometimes make this transaction a reality by their participation in every form. Yeah. But the key here is, you know, I've often said that Rosanna Dana is the patron saint of realtors in all real estate transactions, actually, because, you know, it's always something. And having been in contracting for many years, you know, once you open up the ground, you have no idea what you're going to uncover.
Sure.
And so it's important to work with your trusted professionals each step of the way, to document everything each step of the way, so that when you do have that hiccup, and particularly when you're talking about the individual who all of a sudden, you know, somehow aliens came upon the property and the tank is gone, you have that documentation. And that's in today's world now with video that helps so much. One of my favorite horror stories took place before the change of agency law, where it turned out, even though I was helping an individual who was a friend of mine buy a house, I made it clear to him that we all represented the seller. We treat him honestly and fairly as a consumer and disclose everything. And I had shown him this property had been just recently remodeled by the individual. Usually I would suggest, you know, that with an older home, for people to get a home warranty. As a realtor, I'm obliged to inform the consumer or buyer that and seller that these warranties are available. We don't have to sell them, but we do have to have them acknowledge that they exist. And I had told them, hey, everything is done. It's new. And the heating system was new. The electrical system was new. They had just completely remodeled this house. Mm-hmm. And when we accompanied them for the walkthrough, I heard this buzz. And this type of buzz comes from an electronic transformer. And there are only two in a house. It's either your doorbell or it's related to the relay system for your thermostats downstairs near your heating system. So first thing, I went next to the doorbell, looked at it, took the cover off. And all you have to do, it's just stuck. All you got to do is just, like if you were flicking a mosquito away, that's all you have to do is hit it. It'll dislodge and that hum will stop. And so it wasn't the doorbell. I went down in the basement. And I'm looking at this. I take the cover off. I tap it. It ends the hum. I put it back on. And then I'm stymied. I'm like, something's wrong. Something, wait a minute. And I'm looking at a 40, 50-year-old American Standard boiler. And I'm saying, wait a minute. There was a new boiler here before. And retentive as I can be, I had all of my notes, including the inspection report. I ran to my car, and I was worried that the buyer wasn't there yet, and the house was now vacant. And I go to my car, and it says right there, brand new Utica boiler. And I'm looking at an American Standard boiler. And so then I had to get a hold of the cooperating broker and let them know that, lo and behold, that someone during the middle of the night had stole their boiler and put in an old one. And I had to disclose this to all parties to be negotiated at the closing table. And oddly enough, the seller was absolutely apoplectic because the lawyers didn't want to talk to him. I had to go and approach him, and the other agent, the listing agent, didn't want to talk to him. so they left it up to me to disclose the bad news. And of course he approached me like I was this ogre. But I said, you know, I have a fiduciary obligation to you in representing you as a sub-agent of your listing agent to inform you that, lo and behold, there is a American Standard boiler, you know, in the premises now that's about 40, 50 years old, whereas when we did the inspection, as per the notes right here, that it was a brand new Utica boiler. The attorneys had to work it out amongst themselves, lay the foundation for, in the event that there were to be a lawsuit, that the buyer had the opportunity to go after him for that.
Mm-hmm.
And can you guess when we found out what profession his family was in?
HVAC?
Yep. I'm like, come on. Seriously? The amount of work and effort that you put into to doing this, I mean, you can't make this stuff up, but people do sometimes.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, I have some people who flip properties, investors in my client roster, and I've certainly heard of people stealing boilers and stealing copper and things like that, but I've never heard of putting an older one back in.
Yeah, it was unique, and actually it's just one of the episodes that I have to have in this book that I'm supposed to be writing about all these experiences. So, Jeff, I thank you so much for joining us today on Let's Save Thousands. And once again, can you tell us where our audience can reach you if they're looking for representation in buying or selling a property?
Sure. I appreciate it, Ed. It was a pleasure. Again, it's Jeff Seedsma, Seedsma Law, LLC, 84 Washington Street, Morristown, New Jersey. The business phone number is 973-870-0470.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you, Ed.
Hey, Ed, that was a really good interview with Jeff. Some good discussion on contracts and real estate law, and it was good. He's a good guy.
He's an affable guy. He's a skilled guy, and he'll guide people the right way.
Yeah. Okay, so our last wrap-up here. Bud is dreaming of a bigger home. Why not buy it this year?
Why not?
Why not is right. So are you clamoring for extra rooms and more functional floor plan in your house? Lordy, yes, I am. Maybe it's time to make that move. If you'll be able to work remotely for long term or your overall needs have simply changed, it's a great time to sell your house and move up. Why? Because mortgage rates are in your favor and higher priced home sales are powering more moves across the country today than ever. Sellers in today's market are finding the space they need and the space they've always dreamed about having by purchasing a home in the upper end of the housing market. So with few homes available for sale and high demand from today's home buyers, sellers are profiting in major ways this season. Bidding wars are gaining traction, driving up sales prices more and more throughout the country. This means sellers are able to leverage the extra cash that they get from selling their home and being able to take that with the lower mortgage rates and purchase that next big home that they've been dreaming about. It's the perfect scenario to move up into the dream home. And according to April Luxury Market Report from the Institute of Luxury Home Marketing, which you are a member of, my love, and I quote, the Institute's recent analysis of sales for 2020 homes over 5,000 square feet support continuing preference for larger homes. The analysis determined that there was a 17% increase in the number of 5,000 square foot plus homes sold when compared to the number of sales in 2019. So 17%. Luxury home prices continue to see record highs in the majority of affluent urban communities as the influence of being able to work from home is still driving buyers away from living in the high density areas. Low interest rates also remain in play, allowing buyers to realize the affordability of owning a larger property, which further reinforces this trend. And I end quote. So the chief economist for NAR, which is the National Association of Realtors, explains, and I quote, the market is hot pretty much everywhere across across all price points. The only area where there's sufficient inventory is in the $1 million plus homes. While the price ranges don't fit every budget, $1 million plus, if it's in your reach this summer, you may want to make the move sooner rather than later. Today, more homes are available in this segment of the market, but as the report mentions, more buyers are investing here too, so competition may heat up a little bit sooner rather than later. The bottom line, if you're planning to sell your current home to move into a larger one, let's connect today. I mean, even the luxury market has gotten very, very competitive. And that is it for the segment today. It's a wrap there, buddy.
Well, once again, it's been a wonderful time being here with you.
Same here, Ed.
We thank you for joining us and spending your Sunday morning with us. Join us next week on WMTR 1250, 9 a.m.
See you then.
Let's save thousands.
The preceding program was paid for by Choice Benefits Agency, LLC, and Kalinka Team Consultants, LLC. The views and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a professional before making a major decision.